the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, we're joined by a man who has become very familiar on our TV screens here in Ireland because of his work with the Magic Wall at election time on CNN and indeed at other occasions as well. He is coming to both Dublin and Galway to appear in September on the 23rd in the National Concert Hall in Dublin, and he's also going to be in the Town Hall Theatre in Galway for a discussion with Dervil MacDonald. John King, you're very welcome to The Last Word.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Now, when you leave the country, if you leave the country and if you say anything critical of your president, Donald Trump, would you be afraid that you might not be let back into the country, that you could get a Rosie O'Donnell type exile imposed upon you?
Well, maybe we'll test that in September when I come across for these events as well. Look, I think that's one of the many fascinating questions that Donald Trump has put on the table. That, you know, the United States of America that I grew up in, we cherish the First Amendment. You're supposed to be able to speak your mind. Yes, you know, would John King like it to see somebody burning the American flag? No, of course not. But that's your right as an American citizen. And so I do think one of the great conversations of our time, put in front of us, front and center by Donald Trump, is that, you know, why does he so dislike, despise, and then act out against people who have dissent and opposition? That's a great American tradition. It's a great democratic tradition. It should be celebrated, not criticized, not condemned, and not prosecuted and persecuted. There are lines. You can't threaten violence or anything like that. But simply saying you think Donald Trump is wrong, you think his, you know, his policy on tariffs is wrong, or you think his policy to be friendly to Israel and not do more in Gaza is wrong, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm not agreeing with anyone's position. That's not my job as a journalist. But there's everything right and everything to be cherished about free dissent. And I think that, again, it's a long answer, but that is one of the big debates Donald Trump has stirred.
How difficult do you find it to be a broadcaster and journalist in the current atmosphere in the United States?
It's challenging. Our business, as you well know, our business is under threat anyway. We're in an evolution because of technology. We're in a revolution because of technology. And we're also challenged because of the polarization of our politics. That's not unique to America. It's at a higher volume in the United States, maybe. Trump is a central figure in it. But we see this fracturing around the world, both in the media and in our politics. We see in, you know, especially among working class people, distrust in all big institutions, the banks, the government, and the media. So it's a challenging time, but I like challenges. I actually think that we need energy in our business and we need commitment in our business. One of the things I say all the time is I'm not anti-Trump, I'm pro-truth. It's not my job to be anti-anybody. I'm a journalist. I'm supposed to watch the game, right? Watch the sport, cover the government fairly and impartially. But when somebody lies or somebody says something that we can document is not true, that's our job to lay that out. But we can't take it personally. One of Trump's political tricks or his political acts, and it works for him, is to try to get you into a personal fight. He does that with reporters. He does that with world leaders. And then he comes after you on social media and he has his whole, you know, MAGA movement turn against you. The challenge in my view, and people disagree with me, and that's fine, but the challenge in my view is to not take it personally, to take a deep breath if he comes after you personally, walk away, take a deep breath, and then come back with the facts and come back with the truth. Don't come back with a personal argument.
What about, though, the perception among some people in the United States and indeed beyond that broadcast news is no longer impartial, it's actually partisan, that particular stations follow a particular agenda either for or against the incumbent president?
There is a lot of that. And that's a, you know, that's the, it's, I'm a former wire guy. I used to be a print journalist before I came into television. I worked for the Associated Press, sort of a, almost a bland middle of the road wire service. I came to CNN because it was an objective middle of the road news organization. We are not perfect at CNN. Nobody's perfect anywhere. But I do think that's a giant challenge for people like CNN. When you have a Fox News or an MSNBC, and they are advocacy journalists. They represent a side. They advocate for a side. They push for a side. And they demonize and criticize the opposition. Do I like that personally? No, I'll be honest with you. As a citizen, I don't like that personally. As someone trained in traditional journalism, sometimes I watch that stuff and my blood starts to boil. But the same point I made about dissent, you know, we have a First Amendment in the United States, a freedom of speech. They have every right to do what they do. And guess what? They make money off doing what they do. And so they're going to keep doing what they do. I think the challenge for people like RTE, people like CNN, is to embrace the technology, realize we have to adjust to how people are getting their news and how people want their news, and then passionately defend the truth and defend facts and try to do it in an interesting and compelling way. It's probably easier, and you can probably make more money if you pick sides and if you join the fight. That's not what John King wants to do, and it's not what CNN wants to do. And so we just have to embrace the challenge in a different way.
But what about the difficulty that perhaps there are occasions when broadcasters and journalists want to have that middle-of-the-road approach, want to be faithful to reporting accurately, but they find their managements are putting them under pressure to pitch things in a certain direction? Or worse, as we've seen in certain cases recently, where managements capitulate to pressure from the Trump administration, making payments and settlements in relation to legal actions, and also at times perhaps moving people off air in case they cause offence to the president.
Right. There are a number of different examples there, potentially, that you just mentioned, including the CBS settlement or the ABC settlement with the Trump administration. I think you have to take everyone individually. Are there cases where people maybe violate the rules of journalism or, as I was talking about before, make it too personal where they need to either be taken off the air temporarily or perhaps in some cases permanently? I think we need to look at that on a case-by-case basis and take Donald Trump out of that conversation. We should do that anytime, whether it's a Democrat, whether it's a Republican, whether it's a man, whether it's a woman, whether it's today, whether it's 10 years ago or 10 years from now, we need to have standards that we adhere to. However, I do think you make a fascinating and a very important point about the current climate. And again, I'm happy to say this. I may get in trouble for some of this, but it disappoints me, especially in the 60 Minutes case where we always edit interviews. And, you know, our challenge is to protect the credibility of our brand. If you do an hour long interview with somebody, but you only have a 10-minute segment, of course, you're editing that interview. The fact that they would settle because Donald Trump, you know, bullied them. They're also in the middle of a corporate merger and they need the, you know, government's permission. So there's a whole lot of politics and business involved in that. But as a journalist, that particular one is very, very disappointing. And it, again, it's an example of the climate we are in. But whenever there's one example that makes you grimace or cringe, hopefully there's some other examples where people learn from that and they'll make you proud.
Well, let me just give you another example, though. The White House press corps, even this week with Donald Trump going to Scotland, the Wall Street Journal has been thrown off Air Force One in retribution for the publication of a story that has been very embarrassing to Trump in relation to Jeffrey Epstein, one that has prompted him to write a massive legal action against the Wall Street Journal. Now, whatever about that particular story, this isn't the first time that access to the White House press corps has now been denied on the basis of whom Trump likes or doesn't like. How serious an issue is that for accurate reporting?
It's a giant issue. And I think, again, we need to explain clearly to our viewers, to our audience, to our readers, to our listeners, whatever platform they're getting their news on, what's happening. We need to explain it plainly. My old organization, I told you I was an Associated Press reporter, they've been kicked out of the White House pool from the beginning of the new Trump administration. And it is historically one of the most fair, even-handed organizations in the world. I know very well its current management because I grew up in that organization. And they're good people and they're fair journalists. And so this is Donald Trump being vindictive, pure and simple. This is Donald Trump trying to protect himself, trying to surround himself with people who are going to ask him. I always joke, Matt, that, you know, Trump wants to be in a room with reporters who say, you know, Mr. President, we're so confused. Are you excellent or awesome? That's what he wants to be in. He wants a love fest all the time. And he has surrounded himself with some conservative or mega news organizations that never question him. I hope this is a phase. And I think that, you know, politicians in the past have not in this extreme of a way, but politicians in the past have tried to shove the media away. And it generally backfires. The only thing I can say is that I find this very troubling. The Wall Street Journal has covered the president aggressively and fairly. This Epstein scandal is a huge problem for him right now because for the first time in either of the Trump administrations, his own base is mad at him. His own base thinks he might be covering something up. This is a big story. And so he's trying to create a fight about something else, right? He's trying to make this a fight with the Wall Street Journal as opposed to why haven't you kept your promise to release all these Epstein documents? As a journalist, it's troubling. I have to be, as an optimist, someone who thinks this is a temporary phase and we'll come out of this tunnel, and hopefully we'll come out of this tunnel in a stronger position.
And I'll come back to you on the Epstein thing in just a moment, but this distraction issue, how difficult is it for journalists? We've known for all of the time that he was previously in office, and now that he's back in office, how difficult it is to fact check him as he gives his press conferences or interviews and often lies as he goes along. But also, how difficult is it to deal with the distractions? You know, this week, accusing Barack Obama of treason, wanting the Washington Commanders to be renamed the Washington Redskins or they won't get funding for a new stadium, demanding that Coca-Cola has a new formula using real cane sugar. All of these things get reported, and I even meant the Rosie O'Donnell having her citizenship stripped, when actually the issue which he uses these to distract from remains Epstein.
You make what I think is the seminal point, which is that you have to put the grown-ups in a room. This is why experience in journalism matters. This is why experience in shaping your program matters. You have to get in the room and say, wow, there's 100 things bouncing in the air right now, and we have a one-hour program or a 10-minute program, whatever it is that you're trying to produce. What's most important? Why is this happening? Let me just go back to a couple of the examples you cited. So at a time the Jeffrey Epstein issue is giving Trump a giant problem with his own voters, the MAGA voters he promised. He ginned up this whole, probably a conspiracy theory, that there was all this damaging information about Democrats and elites in the Epstein files. And apparently he either can't deliver because it's not there, or he can't deliver because there's embarrassing things for him or some of his friends in there. We don't know what the truth is there. So what does he do? He plays the race card. The Redskins was the old commander's name. He says the Cleveland Indians, another team, should, they've changed their name to the Guardians, that they should change their name back. So he's playing to sort of the nativist, xenophobic part of his base there by ginning up issues that deal with race and diversity. Then he goes after Barack Obama. How did Donald Trump first make his name nationally in American politics? By saying Barack Obama was a Kenyan Muslim who was not a legitimate American president. That's a farce and a conspiracy theory. But this is how Donald Trump plays. When he doesn't want you talking about A, he throws out huge charges with fireworks about B, C, D, and E. That's what he does. And so as journalists, we need to decide, do we need to cover that? Do we need to say that he did that today? Probably. But do we need smart people in the room to say, okay, let's think about why he did this, and let then bring in the fact checks? His own Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee in the case of Obama when they looked thoroughly at this, you know, back in, after the 2016 campaign. Barack Obama did not commit treason. You might question certain decisions that, well, welcome to America, welcome to the First Amendment. You can question decisions within that process, but it's ludicrous to think the President of the United States committed treason or his team committed treason. This is done for one reason, to get the Trump media ecosphere to talk about Obama or talk about Hillary Clinton or talk about Hunter Biden or talk about the Redskins versus the Commanders, as opposed to saying, this guy promised to release all this information about Jeffrey Epstein. He's been president for 6 months and we have zero.
And I noticed how when he was talking about Barack Obama in the White House, he subtly put in his middle name, Hussein. I thought that was another red flag issue. Final thing, though.
Exactly right.
Final thing, John King. Will it actually matter, this whole Epstein thing? I mean, the man is president for the next 3 and a bit years after this. It may damage him temporarily with his MAGA base, but in reality, is it going to make any difference?
I think that, to me, as a student of American politics, as I travel the country, that to me, Matt, is right high on the list of the big questions. Will it hurt Donald Trump? This is his second term. We'll see down the road if he actually tries to run again or stay in power, but our Constitution says he cannot. So will it hurt his approval rating? Some, yes. Will that impact his ability to get things done with the Congress? Maybe. But more broadly and more down the road a bit, there's a midterm election next year. Remember what happened to Trump the first time. He governed with a bit of chaos. A lot of the American people got frightened. And then the Democrats won big in the first midterm election. It was 2018 back then. It'll be 2026 here next year. And the Democrats took power. Nancy Pelosi became speaker. She became Trump's biggest rival in American politics. And the Democrats were able to stop the Trump agenda because they controlled one branch of the Congress. That is a huge threat for Republicans next year. And that's where the Jeffrey Epstein scandal could matter. A lot of Trump voters are not necessarily Republican voters. They come out personally because of their support for him. And then he asks them to come out and support Republican candidates. What if they don't want to vote next year? What if they're disappointed? It will not take much. We live in such an evenly divided country right now that it will not take much if Republican turnout or Trump mega voter turnout is down a little bit. And then some of the independents who came back to Trump in the last presidential election because Joe Biden disappeared, you know, if some of them aren't there, that's enough for the Democrats to have a big election year and take the House. So I live in a world where things you might not have 20 years ago thought so much about, you know, a 1% movement in these voters or even a 0.5% movement in these voters in certain states, normally that doesn't matter. It doesn't make that big of a difference. In the evenly divided American political world I live in now, that can make a huge difference. And I do think in 2026, and perhaps even for someone like J.D. Vance, who wants to run for president in 2028, this Epstein case could have a shelf life. It could be there for a long time because they built it up as such a big deal. And right now, at least so far, they can't deliver.
John King, it's been great having you on the program. John, of course, CNN anchor and chief national correspondent, is going to be in Ireland in September for two nights. Tuesday, September 23rd in the National Concert Hall in Dublin. Tickets available from nch.ie. And then the following night, Wednesday, September 24th in the Town Hall Theatre in Galway. Tickets from tht.ie. John, thank you very much for being with us.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.